Hello, Austin. Are you ready to rock?
All right.
Okay, well, good afternoon. For some of you, good morning. My name is Dan Saffer, and I'm an interaction designer at Adaptive Path. And I want to thank you all for coming to my panel, which is called Learning Interaction Design from Las Vegas. So before we begin, how many of you have actually been to Las Vegas? All right. How many of you love Las Vegas? How many of you hate Las Vegas? How many of you love and hate Las Vegas? That's me too, so good. We're in good company here. So first of all, I just want to say that most of the quotes that I'm going to be talking about here have been very inspired and shamelessly stolen from this book called Learning from Las Vegas. And Learning Las Vegas was a book that came out in the late 1960s and was revised in the early to mid-1970s. And basically, it took a rather unconventional approach to Las Vegas. At the time, Las Vegas was very reviled by architects as being kind of just a junk place. And, you know, in some sense, it still is definitely today. So we're going to talk about what it means to learn from junk. So when I'm talking about Las Vegas here, I'm basically talking about the Strip. Certainly Las Vegas is a city kind of outside of the Strip, but it's really the Strip that I'm the most interested in. It's definitely, I mean, Las Vegas is the number one growing city in America, which is amazing. But it's the Strip that I think is really the most interesting, fascinating, you know, extraordinary and ordinary place about Las Vegas. So, but when we think about Las Vegas, it's not really as a city, is it? It's kind of I mean, there's nothing on the Strip that a normal city would really have. It doesn't have a post office or libraries or hospitals. It's this kind of self-contained thing. There's no, you know, when you visit a lot of other cities, like when you're going to San Francisco, for instance, you go for the attractions. You go to see the Golden Gate Bridge and stuff like that. When you're coming to Las Vegas, you're coming for the city itself. And I think that's a very interesting thing. It seems like sort of everything is chaotic there. And so, you know, we have to ask, you know, can we really like learn from this, from all this kind of mess? So really the first lesson that Las Vegas has to teach us is this one, that withholding judgment may be used as a tool to make later judgment more sensitive. It's a way of learning from everything. So this is about looking around us with some sort of clear vision and learning from everything that's around us, both the kind of extraordinary and the ordinary. Tibor Kalman, the designer, said that he only found inspiration in high art and what he called sort of the vernacular. And Las Vegas really has the vernacular in spades. The second lesson sort of from Las Vegas is this one, that disorder is only an order that we cannot see. So we need to start, this is from Henri Bergson, who's a French philosopher from the turn of the century. So what we need to do is actually start to look past the junk, look past the clutter and the chaos, and to see what is really going on here. So it's not a great leap to go from this to this. Designers now treat MySpace really the way that architects treat Las Vegas. And you get ridiculous statements like this one from Tim Brown, you know, that, you know, so if, you know, MySpace isn't designed, where did it come from? Did it just grow organically? Did it, you know, spring from the skull of Zeus? No. Someone designed it, and it was designed for a purpose. What Tim Brown really means is that MySpace isn't designed the way that I would design it. Or since it's Tim Brown from IDEO, the way my minions would design it. So we can't really talk about Vegas without talking about class. And I'm not talking about this kind of class, baby cat. I'm talking about this kind of class. Yesterday there was a session about high and low class web design that I hope you all went to. But when we think of Vegas, one of the other things that we think about is this, this idea of, the all-you-can-eat buffets for overweight schlubs. And we have to kind of step back and say, well, you know what? Maybe sometimes making the correct design decision is being appropriate for the audience that we're designing for. An audience that is very kind of unaccustomed to, fancy design. And by fancy, I just mean the type of design that we as designers and people who are attuned to it think of as good design. So does this mean that as we're designing, we need to kind of discard our good design sensibilities? I'll come back to that. So this is what Robert Venturi said about architects, but read it and think about designers instead. So as experts with ideals who pay lip service to the social sciences, they build for man rather than for people. This means to suit themselves, and that is to suit their own particular upper middle class values, which they assign to everyone. So in other words, when we're designing for this idealized person, and it's a person that surprisingly turns out to be someone exactly like us. We instead need to actually design for people. And that may mean that we have to start thinking about the things like technology. It could be that our technologies are getting too complicated for many people to use. So, people want to use these technologies without the hassle of having to manage all these various separate technologies. So people want to go to Paris, but they don't want to necessarily have to deal with the French. So, why do we have a different program for email, IM, blogging, listening to music, all those things, when I can go to MySpace and have all those things all at once done for me? I mean, if we put aside our snobbery, that's not a bad thing. Another thing about Las Vegas is that nothing ever just does one thing. Everything does multiple things. They've abandoned this idea of pure form, of one site is going to do one thing, one building is going to do one thing. They've instead made it all about this mixed media. So every building on the strip are things like, is a hotel, is a restaurant, is a casino, a theme park, a concert hall, and probably about 50 other things that I'm not listing here. And so they've kind of combined all these things, which kind of goes against what we're taught as designers, which is this, right? The sort of less is more. We've got this mantra, less is more. And, how many times has the word simplicity come up, over the last year, just over and over? But Robert Venturi says, no, less is a bore. That less is just boring. So you have things like the Liberace Museum, which I highly, highly recommend, by the way. So if you've got this kind of, aesthetic of more is more, you've got, MySpace page, where more is more. MySpace page, MySpace allows you to do almost anything to their page. The aesthetic is more there. There's more, you can add more color, more animation, more music, more sound, more of everything. And you can use this tool to kind of present yourself however it is that you want. Which brings us to this idea of role-playing. So role-playing obviously has a big part of the Las Vegas experience. You don't have to be Bob from accounting. You can be Bobrius the Gladiator, right? You can be someone else there. And you can be, when we're talking about designing online, you can be someone else there too, can't you? You can be, Grandir the Troll, or, you can be Alexa Wonder Girl on MySpace. It's all about switching roles and designing to allow people to switch roles. And part of that means this idea of, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Can you imagine any other city that would have this as their as an official advertisement for the city? Sadly, actually, I can. New Orleans, I think, would be the other one. Woo! But, you know, so, you know, Las Vegas promotes, you know, sex and violence and chaos. And, you know, with kind of this wild abandon. And it's because, you know, everything you do there is okay. You can't break Las Vegas. You don't need an undo button ever. At least in theory. Another lesson from Las Vegas is that the familiar that's a little off has a strange and revealing power. So I'm sure most of you have seen the Statue of Liberty, but how often have you seen it at half size with a roller coaster behind it? If you put something in a different context, it allows you to see it in a different way and experience it in a different way and think about it really in a different way. What, you know, the Statue of Liberty moves into being something completely different in this context than it does sitting in the New York Harbor. Las Vegas definitely understands user experience. Aside from the Walt Disney sort of theme parks, very few people were thinking about the entire experience like Las Vegas does. So you've got carpets that are designed to keep you inside the building, that the pattern is so complex that you have to keep moving in this circle around to different areas. You've got oxygen that's pumped into the rooms to keep you more alert and spending more money. No clocks are visible. Some of the casinos you can see at the top here of this image have painted the ceilings to look like daytime sky, so you can never tell what time it is there. And the whole thing is to keep you there and to keep you engaged. And Las Vegas definitely understands this sort of macro level user experience design, and as well as micro level. But let's talk more about kind of micro level first, and then we'll get macro level first, then we'll get to micro level. So the real third lesson of Las Vegas is that we know Las Vegas is not made like an ordinary city. It doesn't have in that central hub the things that a normal city would have. Instead, it's organized in a different way. And that way is around a pattern of activities. So, you've got gambling and shopping and staying and all those kinds of things. In the same way that MySpace is also organized around a pattern of activities, this, you know, mega pattern of activities, like trying to collect everything in one place that everyone might want to do on the web. You've got IM bulletin boards, photo sharing, all those things in one place. I want to talk a little about sort of, you know, the functionality of casinos, for instance. So if you look at casinos, and we could actually look at all different types of, we could look at the shopping experience in Las Vegas and the eating experience in Las Vegas. All those things are slightly different, but I want to focus on casinos because it's kind of, you know, it's a unique thing. So with casinos, you've got this idea of this tiered functionality. Anyone can come in, put a nickel in a slot, and pull the slot and play. You don't have to have any sort of training. You don't have to basically know very much at all to play slots. But slightly more, you know, you can get slightly more experience. If you start to learn a little bit, hey, maybe I'll play blackjack, or, you know, maybe I'll do craps or roulette, or, you know, something like that. All the way up to this kind of, you know, high stakes poker game. And they've made each level of the experience really good. It's not just that they ignore the beginning users, or, you know, they focus on the high end users. Each level, each tiered level of the functionality of the casino is its own kind of rich experience. And, you know, certainly, yes, the high stakes people are treated better, but the slot machines, as I'll talk about in a second, have become sort of the bread and butter of casinos. So if we sort of fade down to kind of this very micro level of interaction design at the at casinos, let's quickly talk about slot machines. So a well-designed slot machine, how much do you think a well-designed slot machine as a model can make in a year? Guesses? We got 250,000. Is it get 50,000? $1 billion. $1 billion. Slot machines gross more every year than McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King, and Starbucks combined. It's a huge, huge, huge industry. I'm talking about a single model. A single model. Yes. I don't have the statistics for one exact model, one particular machine, but yeah, it still has to be a very, very large number. So, other things about slot machines. Players initiate a game every 6 seconds. Every 6 seconds. So that's 10 games a minute. So that's a lot of interaction with the machine. And how do you tune that to getting to the point of, where players can actually play and have this good experience in 6 seconds is something that a lot of people focus on. So how do they do it? How do they design at this kind of micro level? Well, the very first thing is that they very much focus on a specific audience. That's the very first kind of takeaway about this. They're looking at women over 55 with disposable income. That's their primary persona. They're going after that level. Number two is, so those things kind of start to filter out, like all the design decisions that they make have to be for women over 55 with disposable income. So for example, they have designed all the machines so they can be played by anyone who is legally blind. The typography on it is large enough and bright enough to be seen by people who are legally blind. So that's like one of their, design criteria. Can it be seen by the legally blind? The second thing they do, is all about this kind of they play with feedback and positive reinforcement. And so everything that you do has some kind of feedback, and most of it is some kind of sound feedback. On some of these machines, there can be up to 400 different sounds on each machine. So they have sound engineers that are designing to that level of specification, even to the point where they're doing things like sweetening as the coins drop down into the chute. They sweeten that a little bit to make the sound a little richer, so that you keep going, you keep playing. I should have prefaced this by saying these are very evil machines. Do not waste your money on slot machines. So, but they're very ingenious, aren't they? So, I mean, they give out these variety of rewards. They give out very small pays to kind of keep you going. They give out these medium pays that you can kind of get to as kind of the next tier. And then they have these huge jackpots that, one out of 46 million people might win. the slot machines are also, for you engineers out there, they're built on a very, very strong architecture level so they can be tweaked and tuned at any number. So they can calibrate, for individual machines even, what the percentage is for winning. So if they find some areas that, one out of every five isn't enough to keep people going, they can turn it down to one every four, those types of things. So that's slot machines. They're very crazy, yet accessible, indeed. So getting back to the sort of question I raised earlier, how do we now design, knowing kind of what we know, like doing this kind of look at Las Vegas? How can we take what we think of as good design and make it for for people who aren't like us to actually use? And for me, the answer comes down to basically this one thing, irony. We have to start overcoming the sort of class divide between us and other people using irony. I mean, that's kind of the final lesson for me from Las Vegas is that we have to start, you know, we get too serious about the designs we do. We think that everything has to be perfect and everything has to be, you know, just so. And it, you know, it has to be very stylized with very tiny type. And the message of Las Vegas is that no, it actually does not have to be that way. It can be fun. It can be bold. It can be bright. And we just have to approach those kinds of designs with this sense of irony, this very sort of bold-faced thing. And so that, I think, is what Las Vegas can teach us in the past and the present and the future. And that is it for me. I'm being told I have to stop now, so I will. And that's perfect. Thank you all.